As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again, the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, Carvero and Chapel Hill. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, coming at you from 103.5 FM. Here in the studio with John Paul again, once again my co-host. Had a little glitch with the musical aspect of the show, but I think we've overcome that.
Yeah, well, things happen.
And, we have some new instruments that just got put in here.
Yeah, I seem to have still stayed, kind of halfway asleep so far today.
Oh, you're awake now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sort of.
Anyway, this is the Speakeasy coming at you. We don't actually have a guest today. We just decided we'd sort of ramble through some things in our own lives as well as give a little bit of political horizon.
We are our own guests today.
Yes, we are.
Yes. And welcome are we.
Yes, indeed.
Welcome. Yes.
John, can you turn me up a little because I can't hear myself at all in this headset?
Well, welcome. Welcome to Claudio's Speakeasy, Claudio.
Thank you. Who is that guy?
Who is that guy?
I just wanted to say I really hated last week. I had to miss being stage manager, or actually a couple of weeks ago, being stage manager for Arlo Guthrie at the Carolina
Theater.
Yeah,
your car blew up, didn't it?
Ah, man, blew a head gasket on the way to taking the gig, and I was stage manager for the event. And
at least you weren't accused of terrorism.
I was, yeah, right. It didn't get me.
I did
disappear in a cloud of smoke.
Did it smoke and all that?
Oh, I was gone. My car was not visible for a minute there.
Whoa.
I was completely in a cloud.
Just blew absolutely.
I got out of the door. I was pulling into the post office when it happened. And I got out of the door, man, and I had to sort of wade through the cloud I was in.
Oh, ouch.
I've never blown a head gasket before. I've got a Ford Windstar.
That's probably steam from where you blew the...
It smelled like burning antifreeze.
Yeah, that's what it was. Bah. And that stuff is not good to breathe in, by the way.
No, I'm sure
you should try to avoid breathing in burning antifreeze.
I still remember the smell.
Yes, it's not pleasant.
I have nose memory.
Yes. I don't think it's good for you.
Last week, the Carolina Theatre had Tommy Emmanuel from Australia, who did an amazing... guitar performance. He plays a guitar like four people backing him up.
Yeah.
And then he does these native outback effects to go along with his music. I told people that he was basically Crocodile Dundee on steroids.
Yeah.
That's kind of how he came across.
That's wild.
But had a good house. Really enjoyed meeting his manager too, the sexy Linda. And,
if you're listening, Linda, you've now been identified as the sexy Linda.
Yes, in case you're tuning in. She was wonderful to work with. I ended up working as their runner, but I really, really regretted missing Arlo because I love his music. And he was going to do a 20-minute rendition of Alice's Restaurant, which, of course, I missed the live version of.
Man. Oh, that would have been fun.
That kind of bummed me out on the way to work.
Maybe next time.
Speaking of next time, we may have the mayor of Lizardlick. On
Charles
Wood, the mayor Charles Wood. He has produced some kind of a film with somebody else in Lizardlick, somebody that's in the country music scene. And they actually want to come in here and do a studio shoot with us interviewing them on the Speakeasy and then make that part of the movie. So, dress in something you want to be seen in next week, Mr. John Paul.
I don't know if I want to be seen in anything.
Yeah, but, same here.
Okay, whatever.
I'm bringing a black drape for myself.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk through it.
Maybe I'll bring my hood.
Your hood. Yes. You are a hood.
Yes.
And so trust me, what else?
It's the hood I wear when I go out and do terrorism.
That's right. He's hoodwinked. I was speaking of terrorism. I finally saw that film. What is it called? Rendition, basically based on Extraordinary Rendition.
Extraordinary Rendition, yes.
I think every American should see that so they can see what their own government is doing to them.
Well, tell us a little bit about what was on the film.
Essentially just a total innocent because his name sounded familiar, wasn't even spelled the same as a terrorist, and because they had some similar misspellings of people that called him, he was Egyptian, but he was been raised in America since 14.
Yeah.
But because he had a couple of I's and E's that looked similar to his name, they just decided that he needed to be investigated. And essentially, despite the fact that he had no information to give because he was not associated with any terrorists, they basically tortured him into basically admitting things that that he didn't know at all because he was tired of being in pain.
Now, was this the Canadian guy?
I think it was loosely based on that.
Yeah.
I think the work is, you know, the film is certainly done as a work of fiction, but it was based on that.
Oh, it is. Oh,
because
okay.
Those circumstances were woven into that story.
Yeah. Yeah, that story about the Canadian guy is just incredible.
Yeah, you know, and the German fellow, too.
The guy wasn't even coming to the United States. He was flying to Canada, and his flight got diverted. So he had to land in the United States, and they came on the plane and got this guy. And then he lived hell for like 6 months or a year after that.
And something similar happened to a German.
Masri is the German guy. Yeah.
They actually show you on the special features on the CD of Rendition, they show you that entire documentary.
Oh, good.
Which was well worth seeing.
Yeah.
It just enrages the soul to think that, you know, our own government would subject us, we the people, to this.
Well, it also makes you think that while they're completely wasting their time doing this stuff to completely innocent people, what really is going on?
Yeah, what's happening to the guilty ones?
Could be a problem. Well, one of the things...
Well, the guilty ones help them in their fear-mongering, so they want to keep those guys alive.
Exactly, and that's why they don't catch them. That's why Bin Laden still hasn't been caught. If he's alive, we don't even know really if he's alive or dead. But
I think they're friends with the Bush family, so you know they're not going to.
Well,
they've
been friends with the Bush family for decades.
Yeah, that's a known fact. Bin Laden family, not necessarily him, but the family.
Well, his brothers, his fathers, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Just blah.
And for all we know, him too.
For all we know, we do know that he came to the United States at one point.
Mm-hmm, he did, and he was actually treated in an American hospital.
Well, he was taken to
by the CIA.
He was taken to military bases.
Exactly.
In the United States.
By the CIA.
He came over here under an alias, Tim Osman, and was actually introduced to members of Congress and all kinds of stuff like that.
So it makes you wonder what the ploy was. What were they developing behind the scenes to advantage themselves of the American people's rights by?
Well, the answer to that is 9/11.
It's obvious. Look out the window, baby. There it is.
That's how they did 9/11.
You came up.
They framed this guy up, and he had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11.
It could happen to you. It could happen to me, the way this country's being run.
The FBI has said, in absolutely no uncertain terms, they have no hard evidence that Bin Laden had anything to do with 9/11.
I don't believe he did.
They haven't charged him.
Right. I think he's escaped.
You go on the FBI website, you see Bin Laden charged for like doing the coal bombing, but there's nothing on there about him doing 9/11. Nothing.
I don't really know what we truly know about him. I mean, he may be a criminal mastermind after all, and you know, deserve whatever he's got coming to him. But I don't think he was that responsible for this situation.
Well, we know that it was the U.S. that helped build him into the big war hero that he was in Afghanistan. They are the ones who the CIA and the ISI, working under the direction of the CIA, are the ones who basically built the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. And they really are the ones who invented Al-Qaeda. The U.S. is.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah. So, and, you know, the other thing, from what I've read, what I've gathered, about 80% of the terrorism that goes on around the world is generated by the United States secret operatives, the Mossad, the French intelligence, the English intelligence.
And this is so known worldwide that it's almost taken for granted, and just the American people don't wake up to it.
Well, not long ago, the former Italian president came out and said exactly that. He said, everybody in the worldwide scene in intelligence services knows that it was the CIA and the Mossad that did 9/11.
The modern-day Gestapo.
This is the ex-president of Italy saying this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's common knowledge everywhere. I speak to my family in Europe. I mean, it's waved like a handkerchief all over the world, and we're just the ones that don't know it.
Well, not too long ago, Zogby did a poll that found that over 50% of Americans don't believe what the 9/11 Commission report says.
I don't believe a word of it myself.
50%. You know, but you don't hear
that.
You don't hear that on TV.
Oh, they don't want to perpetuate that.
They're not going to let that out. So, you know.
Governments become part of the corporation, and the corporates want to cover their butts.
Yeah. Well, here, I've got a little bit of audio here from, it's going to come out of my computer, of David Ray Griffin, who is giving a talk about 9/11 debunking.
Debunking.
Yeah, debunking the debunking.
Does that mean get off the bunk, or what are we saying here?
Get off the bunk and get on the funk.
Get that fat-ass politician off the bunk and remove his cigar.
That's right. So you want to listen to a little bit of this?
Yeah, go ahead. Now, who's this from, you said?
This is David Ray Griffin giving a talk.
On where, what?
I don't know exactly where this is.
We're pulling this off computer, folks, so yeah, bear with us on the technology end.
This is
thing.
Like within the last year. And this is a talk where, for the first time, he reveals some particular types of information.
As regard to what?
Just
to
as regards 9/11 and the Massawi trial.
The Massawi, okay.
And stuff like that. So let's see what we get here. Let's see if it rolls.
And I think we're supposed to be rolling.
It is supposed to be rolling. And why aren't we hearing it? Oh, okay. I see why we're not hearing it, because the engineer is screwing up. Okay,
and we have him right here in the studio.
Let's have the
folks.
Engineers start again. Here we go.
And none of those the stories hold up. In fact, the FBI put out a report to the Massawi trial in 2006 in which they contradicted virtually everything that the public has believed. For example, that Barbara Olson made a call. They say, no, she didn't. This is to her husband, Ted Olson. He claims that she...
Wait a minute. Hold the phone. This is a great icon.
Okay, I'll break in here to identify what this is. This is actually a radio show on the Charles Goyette show, which where Charles Goyette is interviewing David Ray Griffin, has him on the program. It sounds like he's on the phone.
Is this a pirate radio off some banana boat?
No, this is a commercial radio.
All right.
This guy Goyette has made a name for himself as a whistleblower, you know.
Good for him.
Truth teller. So,
again, folks, pardon the frequency. It might be a little static, but we wanted you to hear it right from the source.
Here it comes.
Of the events of 9/11, the Barbara Olson call to Ted Olson. And the FBI says that she didn't?
That's right. They say that they do claim that she was on the plane and that she attempted a call, but that it was unconnected and therefore lasted only 0 seconds. And he claims that she called him twice and each call lasted maybe a minute or so. So this is one of these things that should be a screening headline, because the FBI is part of the Department of Justice. And Ted Olson, at that time, was the Solicitor General for the...
Now, let's think about that for a second. You have the Solicitor General of the Federal Bureau of Investigation lying to the American public, to the 9/11 Commission, to any other number of government departments.
And not even thinking twice about it.
Making this up. Claiming that his wife called him when the FBI now has said that it did not happen. So you got to, there's a number of levels of here to think about. One, what is the reason for somebody like Ted Olson to make something like this up? Well,
certainly an agenda.
Seems obvious that he's in on it.
Mm-hmm.
He's in on the crime. Why else would he make up this story to make it? To try to make it look like something happened that didn't happen. Okay? He's lying because he's part of the criminal conspiracy that did 9/11. And, by the way, he and his wife were having their troubles, as has been said.
Good time to get rid of her.
Yeah. And so this would fit very nicely into an agenda for someone who wanted to get rid of their wife, using something that just was ongoing that he was already a part of.
And just to inform the American public, for those of you who are not aware of it by now, I think really everyone should be, it is no longer the American Department of Justice, but the American Department of Just Us.
Us, yes. That's all that matters. Just us. The guys at the top of the criminal conspiracy, the cabal that is now in charge of the United States. And actually, has been for a very long time. I think that things really started getting way off base as early as 1845.
Oh, I believe it, generational.
And, it's a multi-generational criminal cabal that has been controlling things in this country since that time.
In the government.
Yes. Well, let's listen to a little bit more of this.
The Department of Justice, and they're saying that what he told the American public isn't true. So that's one example of the fact that we don't have any evidence, every kind of evidence that you look at, that there were hijackers on the plane.
Well, that's funny, because those scoundrels at Popular Mechanics told me on the air on this station, I mean, we laughed at it, but they said, no, their DNA was recovered at the World Trade Center site. I mean, it was so preposterous. But this is what they were saying. This is what the Popular Mechanics magazine guy was saying.
Almost everything the Popular Mechanics people say is preposterous. So, for example, on that History Channel show.
So let's not put Popular Mechanics in government, folks?
No, let's try to keep them out of the houses of government.
Indeed.
Yes. Continuing.
Show that was put out a few months ago. One of them... who himself, you know, claim they have all the scientific expertise. They have no degrees in this. But they're claiming, cell phone calls can be made at 40,000 feet, no problem. The FBI would not...
And I can't make those calls in the woods.
...the idea that any high-level cell phone calls from airliners were made. And see, that's what the 9/11... Truth Movement had been saying. These cell phones in 2001 didn't work from airliners above a few thousand feet.
Yeah, by the way, that thing about cell phones not working above 2,000 feet.
One of the reasons I don't have a cell phone is because I live too far in the woods to be able to use it.
Yeah, well, just think how hard it would be to make it work from 40,000 feet.
That's
above
my point.
The earth, yes. And, you know, there's been a number of people that did... studies testing this thesis, idea.
It's been studied,
and they found very conclusively that once you're airborne, it's very unlikely your phone will work even at low altitudes. Like you get some spotty coverage below 4,000 feet. Above 4,000 feet, you get almost none. Above 8,000 feet, it's completely impossible to make a cell phone call from an airplane. That's why American Airlines is developing a repeater system that will allow people to make phone calls while they're in flight. They put a repeater in the aircraft that can communicate with the ground.
With the towers.
And then relay it to your telephone.
Yeah, but that doesn't exist yet,
does it? It does, well, it exists, but they haven't actually installed them and started the program yet. I spoke to the woman who was the head of that program on the telephone. When I happened across a little blurb about the program in an advertisement or
and
something.
Had her contact?
I just called up American Airlines and said,
oh, I see.
You know, can you put me in touch with the people who are running this program? And they said, yeah. So I got this woman on the phone. And I said, well, you know, I'm really curious about these cell phone systems you're going to put in. Are you telling me that you have to have these in order to make calls from airplanes? And she said, well, yeah, we wouldn't be doing it if you could make calls without them.
Right.
And I said, well, so you're saying that it's just not possible to make telephone calls on a cell phone from an airplane that's in flight? And she said, yeah, that's right. It's not possible.
You know, the thing that gets me with this overall conspiracy is just how absolutely pathetically stupid our government thinks we are as a people.
Well, apparently some of us are really stupid.
Yeah.
Because Bush still has a 19%.
Well, that point is proven right there, yeah.
Bush has a 19% approval rating, the lowest.
And we still got that sucker in charge. Yeah, give me a break.
But I'm wondering, who the hell are these 19 people?
Yeah,
19%. How
they
in
need
the
to go.
World can they...
We need special rendition for those.
They need a little special
put them
treatment.
On a plane. Give them a free trip.
With George.
Yeah.
Let's put George and them
I
on a plane
I think him and
together.
Bush need to go to jail for life.
Absolutely. And I have a great idea for the kind of punishment they should have. You put them in the jail cell, this little tiny, like, 8x16 jail cell. 16 may be a little too long. Maybe 8x12.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put a webcam in there. So that and put them on the web 24 hours a day so people can watch their sorry asses.
There it is.
Okay, and then have a interconnect with people on their computers so that they can talk to him and
maybe read
harass
him a book,
him.
Read him the news or something.
Read him the news. No, harass him. you know, while he's living in his jail cell for the rest of his life without the chance of parole.
Use the same methods he's using.
Yeah, he and a bunch of other people really belong.
Oh, the whole administration, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
Including Hillary.
Well, she's part of the problem. She's not part of the solution. And I'm afraid to say that Barack Obama
is
also.
Yeah, I'm not sure about him either.
Well, he takes huge amounts of money from the nuclear industry. And he changed some legislation that he was working on. Which would have
informed the public of radiation exposure.
Right. And that was because they'd had a big one that eventually leaked out, although the Exelon people didn't want it to leak out.
Do you remember where this was?
This was in somewhere in Illinois.
Hmm.
And you know, his state.
Right.
And so after he got some money from these guys, he rewrote the legislation. And made it like completely toothless, so it was basically voluntary, and that's where it ended up.
Having worked in the nuclear industry myself, I can tell you it's pretty toothless to begin with, because the way the NRC works is they literally ask the company for permission to find them, and then they ask them, you know, how much they want to base it on. So there's no actual supervision. The NRC goes in there and basically gets the attention of management there and asks for permission to sue them, and how much should we do it for?
Yeah. And, well, besides which, half the
people... This is who we got protecting us, people.
Well, half the people in the NRC are from the nuclear industry.
Of course. They're on the board.
So it's the same guys, and they're getting huge amounts of money from their stock holdings while they're in the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Yeah.
We don't have anybody covering our backs.
Yeah. Where's their interest lie? Where their loyalties lie?
No teeth in the dog.
Yeah. None whatsoever. Well, listen, you want to take a little listen to this other thing? This is the same guy... No, this is a different guy. This is Stephen Jones, who is the physics professor from Brigham Young University, who was basically buttonholed one day by somebody who said, well, you know, have you looked into this 9/11 stuff? There's some very suspicious stuff about it, and I wondered if you knew anything about it. And he said no, and the guy said, well, the information indicates that it was an inside job, that they were... They planned and executed this thing from within the government. And he said, oh, well, I don't believe that. That's a ridiculous idea.
Our government is good.
He was just like flabbergasted. He couldn't believe somebody would say that. But the guy said, well, okay, if it's really not true, then you won't mind looking into it yourself. And he said, well, okay, I'll look at it. So the guy gave him some references, and he goes and starts reading about it. And the more he reads, the more he realizes there's something to what this guy is saying.
Uh-oh.
And so he starts looking into it as a scientist. He's a physicist.
Mm-hmm.
And he has all these testing facilities available to him where he can take materials and put them through mass spectrometry and be able to see what they're made of, tell what's in them, you know, and get some evidence about what really is was on the ground there. So he got a bunch of materials and started testing them. And this is like several years later now, he's talking about it. And this is one of his talks. Let me see what we get here if I start this up. This is the Boston 9/11 conference of December 2007.
The question I want to pose today. Could we find unreacted thermite?
Okay, let me explain what he's talking about.
Thermite, yeah.
Thermite is a explosive that's used in demolition. What it does is it burns really, really hot. Within 2 seconds, it goes from room temperature to 4,500 degrees.
Whew.
It's built into what are called shaped charges,
mm-hmm.
where they pack it into a tube that has a slit along one side that concentrates the force of its explosive power
mm-hmm.
coming out through that little slit. So it's like a lens, like a valve, a pressure, like you get when you, like, you know, when you turn on your hose and you put a nozzle on it, and it'll just dribble out if it doesn't have a nozzle. We put the nozzle on it, tighten it down, and it shoots way
direct
out.
Direct the aim, essentially.
And focus the energy.
Focus it, yeah.
And so these shape charges are typically what's used to pull columns out from under buildings in order to have them collapse.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that is what it was done on 9/11 with these buildings. And he has found, through his scientific analysis, has found the residue of these explosives in the dust and on the steel that he got samples of from the World Trade Center.
Well, one of the extraordinary things about that whole event is how quickly the government cleaned up its crime scene and didn't allow anybody to take anything.
Right, and
it was shipped to all sorts of countries
to China to be melted down.
So we have no way of investigating what really happened.
Well, and some of it went to a landfill near New York City.
Yeah,
and
but under top security, all of it.
Right, but what the government couldn't do was control everyone.
Right,
so there are a few people who actually, right after the collapse, went out and started gathering samples.
So Italy, Germany, Russia, if you can find any of this stuff, get back to us.
Well, it turns out that people got enough of it. There's actually plenty of it to test. And David Ray Griffin Stephen Jones has tested it. Yeah. And that's what he's talking about here. So let's listen to a little more what he has to say. He's saying what he's done is he's found the residue in these samples. But he says, you know, we needed to get a little more information. We need to actually find unreacted thermite itself.
And it's got to be somewhere.
Right. This is what he's talking about now. So here we go again.
In the World Trade Center dust. We see the residue. This is the smoking gun already, but can we find the gun, I guess you'd say. The unreacted thermite. Ta-da. Many red chips I found in the World Trade Center dust. About last June, I started noticing these. They're attracted by a magnet. A thought came, well, maybe it's just paint. There's all over these little red chips. They're like eggshell chips. You know, you scrunch up an eggshell, and you get about that thickness, roughly speaking. These are quite tough, though. They're strong. And now these are bilayered. This only shows one side, the red side. The other side is a dull gray. Red is the color of iron oxide,
one of
the oxides, Fe2O3. It already suggests something to you. They're attracted by a magnet, suggests iron as well. And now the chemical composition, are you ready, of these chips, the red side. I won't talk much about the gray side. It's harder to analyze using this method. But the red side has, I just hardly wait to show you. Okay, here it is.
He's working
these
with
are
his
red
PowerPoint
chips.
Presentation.
Yeah. The one is from the Liberty Apartment, McKinley. The other is from the Brooklyn Bridge sample.
Now, what you're not seeing, of course, on the radio are these graphs that he's put up that are the readouts from the analysis that show the peaks at these various points that indicate what type of material you're looking at. And they're labeled, you know, with the periodic table letterings on them.
These also show, can you see it? It's very clear. Iron. It's hard for me to point to it from here, but I think you can pick out now. Fe is iron. Si is silicon. Al is aluminum. K, potassium, very clearly. And, of course, oxygen. It's the same signature as the spheres. It's the same signature as the commercial thermite. I've put them.
Okay, the spheres he's talking about are the byproduct of thermite explosions that you find in the dust of any building that's been demolished by controlled demolition using thermite and thermate or variations of thermite.
And how does the metaphor sphere apply?
Well, the spheres are actually these tiny little balls that are from very, very small up to visible sizes, with the naked eye, I mean.
Okay.
You can see even the tinier ones with a good sized magnifying glass.
Is this something that scatters out when?
Yeah, it scatters out and it's all over in the dust.
I see.
Because it's particleized.
Sure.
And because of the intense heat and pressure, it forms these balls, these little tiny microspheres. They're called.
Okay.
So that's what he's talking about.
Side by side, so that you can look at this. Hopefully, as this is taped, you can, you know, pause and make your comparisons. The same signature. Again, the amounts will vary from chip to chip and from sphere to sphere. And where you look on a chip, there are some variations. And certainly where you look on a sphere, there are some, from sphere to sphere anyway, there are variations. The spheres typically are small. A micron up to about 1,500 microns.
A micron is a millionth of a meter. Okay.
That's, and we were supposed to detect this?
not with the,
how is this detectable?
Not with the naked eye. But then, as he said, they go up to 1,500 microns, which mm-hmm. which is large enough to see.
5 millimeters is the largest sphere that we've seen.
1.5 millimeters, he said.
Ah.
So here's a comparison now from the Brooklyn Bridge sample, uncontaminated within 20 minutes of the collapse of the North Tower. Again, red chip on this side. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry.
A dramatic
I've
moment.
I've got to correct the title. Sorry. The red chip is from the McKinley sample.
Man.
The sphere, which is here, is from
here
the
sample
Brooklyn
gathering.
Bridge sample. And so, but again, you see, from sample to sample, we see these the same pattern. Fiok-Alsi. Okay, now this is from, so I have to look at the title. I remember red dust, I called it back then. When were those data taken? June, yeah, June, you see, of this year. This is the first time I've discussed these red chips publicly. I think it's important to get this out. We have done some other tests. Oops. I want to mention, so one of the tests I did, so I took one of these red chips and had a friend scan. It's hard to get thermite to ignite. And I thought, how can we tell if this is thermite or not? It's not easy. It has the right chemical signature. Aluminum, iron, oxygen is what you need. And it's got some other goodies thrown in, silicon and potassium. And so typically, I put the K in parentheses. Not all of these show much potassium. But anyway, that's the signature. And so a friend of mine has an oxyacetylene torch with a very fine tip. He uses it for repairing eyeglasses. And so I had him pass it over one of these red chips. It was just 1/32nd of an inch on a side, approximately square. And it flamed, it flashed as he passed over it. Now, that's not itself a proof, but it's a strong indication, along with the chemical composition and the red color, which indicates iron oxide, that this is a form of thermite. I've provided red chip samples now to an independent laboratory for testing with the question to them, do they agree, do they find that these red chips are a form of thermite? Technical term is aluminothermic. Independently, Justin Keoff and his team, I know he's working with Richard Gage, is now also looking at the World Trade Center dust spheres and red chips also.
So there you have David Ray Griffin, who, by the way, is a theologian from,
oh, is he?
From Claremont Seminary. I keep getting David and Stephen mixed up. This is Stephen Jones, not David Ray Griffin.
You better get it right. They're going to come back at you here.
I'm trying again. This is Stephen Jones, who for decades has been a professor of physics at Brigham Young University. He's now retired. When he started telling the truth, they forced
good,
him.
Good time to let him go, yes.
Yeah, they didn't actually let him go. They just kind of let it be known that they would rather have him retire than mm-hmm. stay on and speak the truth where everybody could hear it.
Somehow he found his voice anyway.
Yes, well, he was far enough along that he could just retire and get his retirement. And
so your point in exposing this so that our listening public knows?
Well, the point of this is that if as this information indicates, the towers were brought down by controlled demolition, then it's an inside job.
Absolutely.
You there's just no way that radical Muslim terrorists could get into the World Trade Center.
Which means we have found the enemy and the enemy is us.
Yes, exactly. So what this means is beyond any shadow of a doubt that the World Trade Center, the attack on 9/11, was not done by bin Laden.
Not perpetrated by anything in Iran or Iraq.
Supposedly 19 hijackers. It was done by our own government. It was done by people within our own government.
They thought it was going to go a whole lot easier, and they expected to be a lot further along by now, but somehow we managed to throw a wrench in the works, and I'm not quite sure how effective that wrench is just yet.
Well, it's actually been quite effective, although you wouldn't know that from listening to mainstream press.
Oh, of course not. Mainstream press is in their pockets.
But in fact, Zogby did a poll.
This is the Unmedia with John Paul.
Yes, by the way, we're giving you the Unmedia. The Zogby poll was taken, which showed that 50% of Americans do not trust the 9/11 Commission report.
I've heard 85%. Where would I have gotten that?
Well, that would probably be a poll taken in New York City.
Oh, okay. Yeah, New York doesn't.
There's a much higher percentage of people inside New York City don't believe the 9/11.
Speaking of that, why did anybody think that New York likes Giuliani? That blows my mind. They were trying to get rid of him before 9/11 happened.
The 9/11 was a boon for Giuliani.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just like it was for Bush.
Yeah, so he had it all set up so he could go out there and look like a hero. But when you looked at it, even while it was happening, I was looking at everybody saying, well, what a wonderful hero Giuliani is for what he's doing. And what was he doing? He was walking around with a face mask on trying to look important. He did nothing.
It was a photo op.
Yeah, it was just nothing but a photo op. I mean, that's what they the whole
that's
government.
That's what they all are. Come on, any politician, that's basically their soul is the photo op.
With very few exceptions, I agree.
Yeah, very few exceptions.
Yeah, and of course the exceptions are the ones who get drummed out right away. You know, like in the presidential race, who's the first people that get drummed out? Dennis Kucinich, the only guy who really tells the truth, the only guy who really represents people.
Well, the first casualty of war is always the truth, so get rid of the truth tellers.
Yeah, and so and now they're trying to...
So we can keep this war going.
And now the Democrats are running candidates against him in his primary, trying to get rid of him so he can't get back into Congress this year.
Oh, boy.
Kucinich is,
I'm getting to where I turn off the news. It's nauseating.
Well, I sent him a contribution, and people all over the country have been sending him a contribution. Yeah. You know, they go to Kucinich.us and click through and find a way to send him some money because he's fighting the good fight there in Ohio and in Cleveland.
Just to remind you folks, this is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, here in the studio with John Paul and
yours truly,
Claudio.
Yes, indeed.
And I just want to encourage you folks, we are still looking for underwriters, anyone that would like to support us here at the station. The money would go to the station and not to us. You can contact me through my website, which is www.claudioarts.com. That's claudioarts.com. And or you can call here at the station. I'll give you that number a little later. But actually, you would want to do that through me, and then I'll pass the money on.
Yes, and while Claudio looks up the number, I will mention that this is WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
And actually, I'd best give my number, not that I commonly do that across the air, but it's 919-499-2565 if you care to support Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else.
Hey,
I do want to do a PSA from the Office of Human Rights and Relations.
Let's go for it.
Apparently, March is National Women's History Month. The Orange County Commission for Women will celebrate Women's History Month on Saturday, March 8th. At the United Church of Chapel Hill, 1321 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, Chapel Hill, from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. This commission will focus on the community's attention on domestic violence at this year's event. Domestic violence is not just a woman's issue. The afternoon will begin with a catered lunch and a viewing and discussion of the film Tough Guys. That's G-U-I-S-E, not Tough Guys like a mafia job or Tough Guys beating up on women.
Hey, yo.
And the speakers at the event will include Executive Director Rita Anita Linger of the North Carolina Coalition Against Domestic Violence.
Rita Anita. I thought that.
Mama had a game plan there.
Yeah,
I think she was writing poetry.
That was it, yeah.
Rita Anita. I'm not going to get into the rhythm there.
We love it.
This event is free and open to the public. I want to make a point of that. If you have any questions, please call the Orange County Human Rights and Relations Office at 919-960-3875. And again, if you want to support the Speakeasy by supporting the radio station itself, please go to my website, www.claudioarts.com.
Will be greatly appreciated.
Indeed. Do we want to announce any of the things that the station is looking for there, John Paul? You can probably get a better view.
The station here is a station that is operated solely by volunteers. No one here. That'd be us. And what we do here is out of love and interest and craziness, not to mention...
And digging up the politicians for you.
Yeah. The station has a wish list, which names a few things that we need here. One is outdoor speakers, toner and paper, a two-line telephone...
With extension,
and dollars for paying for a two-line service... we need some vinyl road signs. We need some bumper stickers. Bring on your bumper stickers. We need some cling film stickers. Anybody that's got cling film stickers, be careful how you try to say that.
Just don't cling to them.
Yeah, and heavy-duty CD players, we don't need those anymore, I don't think. Although, I don't know, I guess we wouldn't turn one down, but we do have two very nice ones in here now that replaced the old ones that were having a lot of trouble.
And if there's anything else that comes to mind, you know, that you think a radio station might benefit by, we would certainly appreciate that. And you can call Laura at 919-619-1023 or email Audrey at volunteer@communityradio.coop.
Let's give that phone number again.
919-619-1023.
Well, that's right. 619-1023. Lovely.
And that's our commercial spiel for the day Claudio's Speakeasy.
That's our promotion for the day. Right.
We've done it now. What time are we looking at there, John Paul?
Well, we're looking at, we've got 10:40.
Just in case anybody needs to set their watch.
Yeah, 10:40 a.m., and we go here until 11.
Every Tuesday from 10 to 11. Sorry, I had to miss the last one, but my head gasket blew on the way to work that time.
So yeah.
The car was out of commission for 4 or 5 days. I was stranded.
That's funny because I just got my car back from the shop a few weeks ago, having just been repaired for having the head gasket blown, but it was sitting around for like 2 years just because I was driving another car. Then I got rear-ended by somebody, told my car, and so I had to resurrect my old 1985 Plymouth Reliant station wagon. And
he's hoping it will emerge valiantly.
Yes. I used to actually have a Plymouth Valiant.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, when I was a touring musician, my buddy and I that played music, we would pack a whole sound system, guitars. You know, we both had two guitars, so it was like four guitars, four speaker cabinets, amplifiers, rack, you know, speaker stands, everything into this little Valiant station. Like, it was just packed as tight as it could get.
That's how mine gets every once in a while.
With the back seat down, and we drove all over the country. I mean, I went everywhere from Jacksonville, Florida, to Seattle, Washington in that car.
Speaking of performing, I've been approached by, actually it's an email thing I got going on right now, but some public library system wants to bring us in for the storytelling festival in another county, and I forget the name of the county right now, but I'll forward you the email. But so we may end up letting the folks know where we give a performance sometime. It may be, I think it's in April.
Okay.
They got a storytelling festival going on somewhere that they'd like us to be the headliner for.
Sounds good.
So I'll keep you tuned in.
Someday before too long, we're going to have to do some live stuff right here in the studio.
Yeah, I really regret that I couldn't take part in doing something for the homeless. It's something that's very close to my heart, and I regrettably that the times just didn't coincide with when we do our show.
Yeah. Well, so, what homeless?
They had Audrey had a special program going on.
Well,
here,
apparently you don't listen to Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly. I'm talking about what we do.
Bill O'Reilly says there are no homeless people.
I don't listen to that fruitcake anyway.
There are no homeless people.
Oh, of course.
Don't you know? Bill O'Reilly said it. It's got to be true.
We need extraordinary rendition for Bill O'Reilly coming right up.
Put him on one of those Aero flights.
Yes, let him be a witness to it.
Yeah,
all of it.
You know, North Carolina is like a headquarters for extraordinary rendition.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and for mercenaries. You know, we got Blackwater that does the mercenary gig over there in Iraq.
Right,
and we've got these white planes that fly out of Kinston, that are the planes that they carry people to extraordinary rendition in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, those are based here in North Carolina.
Hmm.
And there's been a number of protests at these facilities over there from activists who are
quite shameful.
What have us
come of Blackwater? We don't hear much about them anymore. I think they're trying to keep their head underwater.
Well, you know, it's been pretty well established that they've done a lot of murdering and raping and pillaging and and oppression.
Basically, licensed to do whatever they want.
Yeah, well,
via George Bush.
They're apparently immune from any law, even though there's not really a valid law that says they are immune from the law. But functionally,
well, no charges have been effectively pressed.
They don't get charged, and anytime the Iraqis wanted to hold anybody responsible, the U.S. government says, "Well, if you do that, then you know we're going to get rid of you." So, then nothing ever happens.
Yeah.
And that's just a pathetic situation.
Certainly shameful that a lot of that comes from right here.
Oh, yeah.
So, what else you got for our wrap-up? Well, we basically decided to make this a bit of an unmedia day, which we frequently slip into because John Paul is usually busting at the seams of the information he's studied on. I don't tend to study as much as he does, but I do stay aware of it. So I usually give him the lead in that department.
Well, there's... I don't really have brought much more in for today.
Good, we probably had enough.
But there's plenty out there. If people want to learn about this stuff, I suggest start at Scholars for 9/11 Truth or Good Journal idea. Of 9/11 Studies. That's even better, actually. Journal of 9/11 Studies. The Journal of 9/11 Studies is Stephen Jones's site.
Mm-hmm.
And in that site, he has people who write scientific papers or just well-researched papers, and they submit them to the site. They're published on the site, and then people who are in the fields that are relevant to the paper's subjects are invited to criticize the papers. So it's a peer-reviewed online good. Journal. And you have some of the brightest scientific minds in the world writing about 9/11.
Actually, something that smells like a democracy.
It would be similar to that.
Yes.
But they publish these papers, and people are invited to from anywhere, any source, anybody can write in and critique the work that these scientists have done and explain why they're either full of baloney or they're right or whatever.
And see what argument they get back.
And they do get responses. And so far, of the stuff that I've read there, there's no case where any significant information published has been shown to be incorrect.
Interesting. By the way, going back to something before I forget this, I just want to sort of give a full-rounded statement of what I said about the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Yeah.
Essentially, the whole spirit of what I was trying to convey is that the NRC treats every nuclear plant on a favored client relationship status.
Yeah. Well,
and this is what you need to know. This is the watchdog we have supposedly covering our backs.
Yes, the watchdog turns out to be a lapdog.
It's a favored client status.
Yes.
They ask for permission to sue and to discipline.
And by the way, Claudio has some inside information, folks, on these matters, since he used to work at Sharon Harris Power Plant.
Well, I'm not exposing Sharon Harris in particular. I'm just saying in general, this is
right,
just some general knowledge
about
the NRC.
You learn things in general when you're involved.
Yeah, I used to be one of the lead fire watchers there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, nuclear power,
so
by the way.
I just wanted to point that out.
Nuclear power, by the way, is stupid.
I think so.
Okay, it's really stupid because there's no way to handle the waste, and there never will be.
No, we've created a monster we cannot put out.
Yucca Mountain is an abomination. They've already discovered there's several faults that run below it.
It's going to seep out.
It's going to seep out. There's no way to contain the waste. What you should do when you discover that you're producing waste that can never be safe is stop producing it.
When time is the enemy, you know it's going to catch up with you.
Exactly. And if it doesn't catch up with us, it's going to catch up with future generations.
Yes, exactly.
And that makes what we're doing a crime against the future.
And against nature.
Yes. And it should be stopped immediately. So
my sentiments exactly. But I just thought that was something valid to point out, just so that the public doesn't stay asleep at the wheel before that big truck comes around the corner.
Now, I'd like to switch gears real quick.
Speaking of big truck, go ahead.
Going into something a little different, the subject is impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
On January 15th, a group that I am with called the Coalition for the Constitution produced a debate about impeachment between Bruce Fine, who was a former Associate Deputy Attorney General of the United States under Ronald Reagan, and Michael Tomosky, who is a Democratic-leaning columnist. He self-identifies as in the Democratic camp, who writes columns for various well-known publications. The twist on this debate was that Bruce Fine, the Republican, was in favor of impeaching Bush and Cheney, and Michael Tomosky, the Democrat, was against it.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yes. Well, we produced this event. We publicized it as best we could, and we were quite surprised that we had an overflow crowd. We had about 300 seats in the Carborough Century Center, but 500 people showed up.
I heard it was growing. Glad to hear that.
Yeah, and we also had about 2,000 people watch online as we webcast it right online, and it was also broadcast over this station live while it was happening. So that thing came off very, very well. And
And we're actually going to have those folks on again. Plus, he's supposed to get me some impeachment music. I want some impeachment folk songs to play on the speakeasy.
Well, yeah, we're going to have to work on that. Well, now there's something else interesting going on about this is that we, the people in the coalition, have been trying to get David Price off the dime on the issue of impeachment. He has refused to support impeaching the criminals in the White House. He's refused to even support having hearings in the Judiciary Committee, the Conyers hearing, you know, that everybody wants.
The thing that amazes me about this unwillingness to support that sort of thing is, don't they realize just how much public support they would get as a politician for actually standing up for something?
The answer to that question is no. They don't. They don't. And in fact, they say one of their arguments is that, well, the public won't like it, and we'll lose the next election if we start.
You're
going to
lose the next
election
anyway.
Well, you lose it when you have people that are running who are basically neocon lights, and who are not going to get us out of Vietnam, regardless of how they keep saying. Did you know that in one of the
Vietnam,
early,
we still there?
Yeah, we're still in Vietnam. No, I'm sorry. In
Vietnam, Iraq.
Well,
yeah.
I'm showing my age. The thing.
He's an ex-vet, folks.
No, I'm not. I'm not an ex-vet.
No.
The thing about the impeachment is that if people like David Price would stand up and take a leadership position on this,
Have something to admire.
Well, they'd be greatly respected for it because they would be standing up for the Constitution
and for the country
and for just plain simple truth.
Right, exactly.
Of what's going on. But they claim that that would be the worst thing that the Democrats could do and would cost them dearly politically in the long run, which I think is exactly
so it's
the
more about the party than it is about standing up for truth, which we know anyway.
Well, it's more about them in their own minds getting reelected, which that should not be their first concern.
Got nothing to do with standing for anything.
Right. And it's but the stupid thing about it is it's not even true.
Oh, I know.
It wouldn't keep them from getting reelected. It would help them get reelected. Especially in when, like 70% of the population believes that the administration is guilty of all kinds of crimes,
especially
lying
war crimes.
To Congress, lying to get us into the war, lying about spying on people in the United States without warrants. I mean, you name it.
Lying
they've
about
lied
rendition
about it.
Before we proved that.
Right, lying about that, lying about whether or not there are camps being set up in the United States to intern hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. Did you know that? They're building camps in the United States to intern
people.
Is it
the Midwest or some place where they have open spaces?
They're in every state. They're already in every state. Halliburton got a $380-something million contract to build these facilities.
And who do they plan to put in them? Anybody?
You and me.
Right.
And anybody who has any idea that doesn't comport with their idea of what should be taking place. So we're in deep doo-doo in this
country.
And we
call this a democracy.
And people don't realize it. We are in deep doo-doo. We are already living in a fascist state.
Wake up, America. That's a truck in your windshield.
That's right. That ain't no elephant in your room. It's a truck in your windshield.
That's it.
So, well, anyway, on we go.
Much to consider, and we're just trying to point you folks in the right direction as far as looking this up for yourselves, but it's good to sort of wake up and not be discovered dead asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, the other big sleeping elephant is the economy, which we actually have one? Yeah, well, the Bush administration has completely wrecked it. You know,
no doubt.
The money that we spent in Vietnam has put us into a horrible bunch of red ink.
Again, it's Iraq. Iraq, not Vietnam.
That's right.
Vietnam's just a metaphor, folks, but we're dealing with the same issue.
Did I say that again?
You did.
I did. Boy, I'm just an old fart.
Get
everybody.
Your head out of Vietnam.
Don't
You're watching
worry.
Too much MASH lately. Is that what it is?
I don't even have a TV. I don't watch TV.
But now we were in there for so long, it's hard to forget that we're out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks like Iraq's
same,
promising
it's
the same
thing. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's all a bunch of lies, and it's all a huge waste of money, and it's all murdering millions of innocent people for absolutely no reason other than the greed of the corporatocracy.
Greed. That's the reason. Greed.
We live in a fascist corporatocracy.
Yeah, this is fascism, not a democracy, folks, in case you just tuned in.
And I got some news for you. Neither Barack Obama nor Hillary Clinton are going to get us out of it. They're not going to get us out of Vietnam, out of Iraq. They're not going to get us out of this criminal conspiracy that's been going on for 150 years in this country. They're part of the criminal conspiracy.
They're drawing from the same payroll.
They are. They are indeed. Now that
as it were.
That's true that Barack Obama has gotten a lot of small donations from individuals.
Obama may
that's
be less
true.
Corrupted, but the system will chew him up anyway.
Yeah, but what does it mean being less corrupted?
I know, lesser of two evils.
If you say you're less corrupted, you're saying you're corrupted. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a pity that we even have to think that way.
Exactly.
But essentially, the American public, when they go to vote, that's what they think of, the voting for the lesser of two evils, because we got nothing out there that's worth a damn.
Yeah. Well, then that's not to say that we haven't achieved some good things in the United States over its history. It's just that you can't just use that as an excuse to block out all the rest.
That's true.
We really must pay attention to what's really going on.
We need
on.
To reestablish the system so the regular Joe can be somebody we vote for, not just a guy with money in his pockets.
Well, in truth, we've never been able to vote for the regular Joe.
No, we never have.
Because from the very beginning, it was all fixed. You know, in the early part of the country, the early years of the country, nobody could vote unless they were white, male, and owned land.
Yeah, that's true.
That was true for a very long time.
And then
time.
They could vote for the number of heads they had as slaves.
They
could establish the vote not through them, but through just having that kind of a populace.
That's right. So, people need to wake up and learn the true history. And by the way, a great way to do that is read Howard Zinn's book, A People's History of the United States. Anybody who's out there listening, if you want to start looking into the true history of the United States, read A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn.
And again, what time are we looking at there, John Paul?
Oh, we got about 5 minutes.
We got the man from Touchstones.
We got about four minutes.
He's ready to switch
on.
Yeah,
so I guess we'll probably have to close up here pretty quick.
Take over, yeah.
And we'll just go out with our same old music, you reckon?
Well, folks, we were just kind of skating through it today, but we thought we'd touch on some topics that might be of interest. It's always good to wake up. And thanks for joining us once again. And that's John Paul experimenting with the system.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get the thing set.
Are you out of Vietnam at this point? Shall we go toward the close here?
I don't think I've left Vietnam yet.
I don't think he has.
I was never there, so it's hard to leave.
Anyway, I want to thank you folks. Right. I want to thank you folks for joining us at Claudio's Speakeasy, the literary and all else. And we look forward to talking at you, talking with you, hanging out in the studio next week, possibly with the mayor of Lizard Lick and the feature film they're producing, a documentary.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. So until then, this is Claudio signing off at the Speakeasy. Cheers.
Once again, a chill night wind blows its gales across the sea. As the sunset casts an inflamed and rippled hue across the waters. Vast distances of liquid motion stretch their infinity before me. And I have rarely felt so free. The sails are drawn for a night of rest. Where I go from here, the sea knows best. As the veils of night descend upon me, the moon emits its silvery canvas. A spectacle of aquatic celebration, as is only seen by night. The stars are scattered worlds of light against an opaque sky. And the nightfall is a constant whisper of the mysteries around me. Truly, all description would defy the beauty I choose herein to proclaim. Yet still, though encompassed by more wonder than many a man has e'er freed his soul to admire, my thoughts are adrift with the song of my heart, and the song of my heart with the voice of my soul. Adrift, adrift. Adrift, drifting ever back to you.
...3.5 FM, WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.